In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Location, location, location! It's Jeffrey in Los Angeles at Farpoint Media Studios, where we are in the process of moving, just like the main studios are in Phoenix.
I tell you what.
Is everybody all of a sudden wanted by the police?
It's a company move. The IRS has caught up with us. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
The shadows found us.
If you declared it as a church, yeah. You might be able to get...
There you go.
And yeah.
Yeah, and I'm the only thing that I'm worried about by this is that everyone will have been burned out on the moving, and there'll be no one left to help me in a couple of months when I may have to move. So,
Summer, you've got minions. You'll be fine.
Yeah. You just talk dirty to them. They'll do whatever you want.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's wait. Let's just get this right out there, right up front, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Summer.
Yeah.
The Dodgers beat Arizona 3 games in a row.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Jeffrey?
I'm just saying, Summer.
So, Jeffrey, I'm guessing you're liking seeing Manny in Dodger Blue.
I know. Thanks to our good friend Jim Carr, I was able to go to the Dodger game that was Manny's first, and the crowd went nuts. It was fantastic. It's so great to have a superstar on the team. Not that we don't have our own superstars, but it was just like this infusion of just, it's awesome. Great for the team, great for the fans, great for the momentum. So watch for the Dodgers to get into first place and stay there and be in the playoffs. Going to happen.
There we go.
Absolutely going to happen.
Jeffrey?
Yes?
Be nice.
Hey, Summer, share with the rest of the audience the item that Warlord directed you to.
It's just a one of the Micro Machines where it's the Babylon 5 station by itself. I had never seen one until somehow Brad came up with one he found in a store signed by JMS.
Yeah, I read his story. Yeah, we're so jealous.
Yeah, but Warlord found one that's still unopened, so I may try to get that. The auction, I think, ends either tomorrow night or Friday morning, something like that. So I'm going to try to snag that one.
And it rests on a little stand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I've got that one. And then there's also the really nice one was the pewter one.
Yes, I have both the pewter station and the pewter Black Omega Star Fury. There was a design flaw when they made the Star Fury, because the Star Fury is about 3 times heavier than the station.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's sitting on the same stand the stands collapse under the weight.
I know your pain. I do.
There's the station that's 5 miles long, but that's not worth anything. It's taken out of the box.
Right. Actually, I'm disappointed that Revell never made a big model of the station that I know of. They made the Star Fears. I never saw the station.
Yep, I've seen the station. Yep. I've seen it.
Is it like 2 feet long?
No. It's probably 28 inches, something like that. Maybe a little more. I'm the other way. It's more like
18 inches
14,
or something.
Yeah, exactly. 14, 16.
I've
got one of I got it in the box too, Summer. I may really hook you up. I may.
Ooh.
You'd have to be exceedingly nice to me, but I don't know. That might work out. And then I've got the pewter Koshes.
Really? Dude, I really, really, really need to come rummage through your locker, don't
hey,
I?
It's time, because while everything is being moved around, you really should show up here in Glendahan. and who knows what good
and make things
call.
Disappear
and make some things disappear because you know what, that's a metric crap load of money that I keep spending for storage unit to keep all this junk in, and it's like for what? It's for what? Do I save it because I think that it's going to be worth something someday? Well, how much further? I mean, the people that are going to find it attractive and want to pay me for it are folks like you guys, and you're all going to be dead soon. So I really want to think.
Yeah, that pretty much hits it right on the head.
You're right, Jeffrey. I mean, the whole art of collecting is knowing when to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
When it's finally peaked and it's not going to get any better. I think you're there.
Yeah. Okay.
Peter Hansen, Warlord, is saying he'll be in the States in September. So he's more than willing to come by.
And Peter has deep pockets, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
My new best friend, Peter. I raised a glass of Foralejo to you.
Right. I'm telling you, Jeffrey, it's time for
come over and buy Jeffrey some Corralejo and then have free reign. Then Jeffrey will be happy to sell you everything.
It's time for the Jeffrey Willarth Kosh garage sale. I see it.
Yeah, but if I – yeah, I should. No, you're absolutely right.
I really think it's time for me to, like, take, like, a week-long trip to L.A. and just catalog this stuff so Jeff can have an eBay sale.
So,
yeah, maybe that's a great idea. So maybe I – like, during the show – and that would be a reason to listen to the live feed, too.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Is how do we do that, guys? How could we conduct an eBay sale?
Oh, that's easy.
That's easy.
So we build
while we're doing the show.
Oh no, we build a lot and
sell it. You know, you say, hey, you know, run this. I don't know. What's the shortest
time?
We'd have to put out
advance notice, like 2 or 3 weeks, that at this time, between this time and this time.
I mean, what's the shortest interval you can run? Would you have to run it as a sale or as an auction?
I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to do it, and we'll talk about that.
Let's not lay plans out on the show. We'll have to investigate the options, but I think our listeners would enjoy
having first dibs
on some really cool stuff, and so, if it gets more people listening to the live feed, so they get the jump on it.
Now, you know, Christie's is out there, and I'm sure they're going to be chomping at the bit for this, so we may piss them off.
Yeah, they've already sold off that, Star Trek stuff. So.
There you go.
What else is there?
Very funny.
Well, I think it's time to take a break. What do you think? Come back with some deep geeking, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
What's the show tonight?
Epiphanies.
Yeah.
On the next Babylon 5.
The president wants Babylon 5 shut down.
The Shadow War may be over, but the battle for Earth...
It's a trap! Break off!
...has just begun.
They want to get even.
They've already launched Phase 1.
So what's left on Zahad Doom can't be allowed to fall into anyone's hands.
The galaxy is about to get a whole new reason to scream. Walter Koenig guest stars on the next Babylon 5.
In a world where you can't find a movie, the Cue the Film podcast comes at the most dismal time.
This movie is like, there's an implosion and like pretty colors.
This movie features a 3-hour clip of a wonderful waterfall falling.
Four men.
And women.
Vow to do the impossible. To make a podcast where alien movies. Sappy love stories.
I love you, never let us part.
The bad news is, I'm dating Fisher Stevens.
And blockbusters.
I'm king of the world, even though I personally have a vagina.
We'll meet and coexist, kind of. I'm some random British guy you've probably never met, here to tell you the Cue the Film podcast is here. Find it at cuethefilm.blogspot.com.
Bring out your dad.
digging down into the most obscure facts and fandom. This is BE.
Deep Geeking. Have you missed it? I know I have.
I have, actually. It's been fun just dissecting and flogging the whole JMS announcement thing, but you know, we need to get back to what it is that brought us here in the first place. And that's the show itself. And the episode we discussed tonight is Epiphanies.
Yes. The very, very, very breather between storm number one and storm number two.
Yeah, you know, as I was thinking about it today, and the analogy of the dandelion struck me. It's like for the last 6, 7, 8 episodes, all the threads have sort of been entwining around each other to make one solid rope, if you will, of story. We hit into the fire, and then all these things just kind of go poof in different directions, and it's like it's the beginnings of so many other things, even though you don't necessarily see it. You know, to me, watching it again, this is really, is this the beginning of the end for Alita?
Interesting.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah, it is the beginning of a shift in attitude. And you can actually see in some of her behavior in this episode where it takes her.
Right. And some of the character reactions, you know, some of how they deal with her has shifted and comes to the forefront. You know, she tells Zach toward the beginning, it's like, why is it that nobody comes to visit me just to say hi? Why is it when they come to talk to me, it's because they want me to do something?
Mm-hmm.
And as we see in the next 2 years, or the next year and a half, rather, she's basically treated like a tool. They need her to do something, and when that usefulness is finished, they set her aside.
I wonder if it was always meant like that.
What's that?
I said, I wonder if it was always meant like that. Because you saw it developed differently with Talia. Like, Talia was always part of the group. But Lita came in, and then she ran away.
Yep.
And she came back, literally attached at the hip to the Vorlon, and nobody says, well, wait a minute, Vorlon yep. has an aide now, and it's a rogue telepath?
Yeah. Well, Zach even alludes to that. It's like, you know, you went away, you came back, the Vorlons did something to you, and everybody's kind of nervous.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, too, to the scene where Sheridan at the end, when he comes to visit her and says, you know, they go through the hypothetical thing, supposing, mm-hmm. you know, something happened. And she says, well, just theoretically, if these things happen, and Sheridan says, well, yeah, okay, it's a good thing we're talking theory, because this is real. I'd snap your head off so fast. You know, and it's like not at all what you expect. You know, you really, and that's the thing. It's like Sheridan of anybody has always been the I don't want to say voice of compassion, but at least understanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he understands why Garibaldi has some trust issues. He gets that. Okay, you know, he comes to terms with Franklin and what he has to go through to come back, and he accepts. So it's like, okay, you had to do this. You screwed up. Fine, I'll bring you back. With Ivanova, he understands all her issues and everything's okay. But with Lita, you know, I mean, the thing is, he's justified. They were out on a mission. There's a command hierarchy, but you know what? She's not part of the command structure.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but the decision she made affected their mission, affected adversely their alliance with mm-hmm. Bester. It definitely could have adversely affected their lives.
Yeah, right. Right.
And I think that's what he was very upset about, because if you compare it, the hang-ups that you mentioned that the other characters had was nothing compared to sabotaging a mission, Because she, in effect, sabotaged the mission. They were to go to, to Zaha Doom to investigate whether or not there was something there that could help them free these telepaths from this these implants that were forced on them. And she made a decision without consulting anyone. And you're like, oh, I think I'll warn them and tell them to get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah. And then blow up the planet.
Yeah. Now, and, and we don't know that if, you know, we don't know if she told them, you know, destroy the place or just take everything and run. We don't know what she told them. We really don't.
Right.
But they decided to, they decided to cut and run with everything and do a scorched Zaha Doom, you know, policy.
And the thing is, you know, this is, again, we always talk about the brilliance of Straczynski's writing. Again, here's one of those situations where nobody's right, nobody's wrong. You thoroughly understand why Lita did it. And her explanation, you know, when she says he has hurt so many people, it was time for him to know what it's like to feel that.
And what's really funny, what's really funny about it, I don't think she would have ever done it if he hadn't have pushed her buttons.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. He was there and doing things. Of course, you know, her, his whole stance toward her is she's a teep. I mean, he doesn't even treat her like a human being. You know, oh, yeah, she's a rogue telepath, and that makes her part of the family, but he treats her, well, I was going to say, literally treats her like the redheaded stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't talk to her directly, necessarily, unless it's to his advantage or apparent advantage. Yeah. You know,
And literally, he might have made her angry, but he went too far when he said, you know, never forget, I know things about you you don't want other people to know. And that was just one of the, oh, no, you didn't.
You're right, yeah. That's exactly right. Now, I love the scene in the briefing room where it's Bester's point of view as he's like trying to poke through whatever is shielding everybody else's thoughts. And the camera's flipping around, no one's paying attention. And when he comes up, you know, the camera comes on Lita, she just whips her head around with the wide eyes, you know, and then it's cut to Bester's head snapping back. Really effective. That was a really cool scene. I really liked that. You know, and then and there's even Zach. It's like, you okay? Yeah, you know, and Lita's got the little smile on her face. Yep, I did that. You know, but that's one of those things. Again, it gets back to, like I said, the beginning of the end. You know, she's starting to without the, I don't want to say that the Vorlons provided a check and balance for her, but basically, you know, without being subordinate to the Vorlon, now she's testing the limits of those powers. And yeah,
I don't think she ever even considered testing those powers until Sheridan asked her, you know, we need to get rid of the Vorlon. And it was actually before that, when she said, you know, you're hiding something from me, and she said, he said, tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I think we also, we're starting to see Zach trying to become closer to Lita. He's obviously become attracted to her. And it's easy to say this is what the Garibaldi, Talia Winters arc would have been. But I think there's a certain difference here. I wonder if the Garibaldi Winters arc would have been at least a bittersweet sort of thing. This just goes, you know, this just is never going to work. You know, between, and I don't mean that because there's no chemistry between the actors, and it's just how the story is going to unfold. And I'm thinking, you know, especially once you get into year five with the telepath colony and Byron's people, and Zach at the one point says, I don't like it when you're hanging out with those people. And she's like, what?
Yeah, and it's really funny because I don't think he ever saw her as a telepath or not. He genuinely cared about her as a person, only she was too preoccupied to notice. And that was the beauty of that little, there was like a little throwaway scene in the movie Third Space. You remember that?
Oh, when they're on the lift and he just starts talking
about
Yeah,
he basically bears his heart open, but she is so overwhelmed by whatever signals that that thing is sending out. She doesn't even hear him. She doesn't even know he's there.
Right.
And I thought that was a very, very poignant moment. And it finally explained a lot of what happened later in early season 5.
Yeah. And even at the very end when and Objects at Rest,
yeah.
when Vida mm-hmm. walks away with Shakar, as they're going toward their ship, in steps Zach, just off, you know, I mean, we're looking over his shoulder, but in essence, he's watching them leave, and he's still out on the periphery that way, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's really great. I mean, Zach here, he's just, you know, he's just a workaday kind of guy, you know, and here's a pretty girl, and he sees that she's lonely, and it's not, I don't want it to sound like he's on the make. I think he's genuinely trying to offer a hand in friendship. You know, he sees her, you know, it's like, you know, she shows up at her quarters, and it's mostly empty. It's like, what, are you just moving in? And she goes, no, you know, the Vorlon ambassador said I didn't need all the stuff. It was going to detract. And, you know, and you know, I think he's trying to, you know, he's trying to show some compassion. You know, he shows up at the end with pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just trying to be a friend and hope that something more comes of it. And it's just unfortunate. Again, it's like Lita's already stepping down a much darker road, and there's just no way they're ever going to come together and have a happy ending. So that's kind of one epiphany. The other, you know, the next thing obviously is Garibaldi.
Mm-hmm.
And he tenders his resignation. But I'll tell you what, you know, the one scene that was really effective in there is when he's taking the shower, he gets out of the shower, everything's steamy, and he just looks at the fogged over mirror and draws that little face in the condensation.
Mm-hmm.
That was just kind of creepy.
Well, it did you notice the two parts of it? When he's, you know, he's finished shaving, he's looking at himself in the mirror, it's like he's really lost.
Yeah.
He's trying to fit. It's like the ground shifted under him, and he still can't find his footing. He's lost, and he doesn't have a purpose, and he's just staring there. And then he gets the message that triggers him, and it's like there's a shift. There's literally a light. Boom! He has a new purpose now. Only we don't know what it is.
And he erases the face.
Mm-hmm. And
because
you see it when right before he goes to take the message. There's this haunted look on his face. He's mm-hmm. lost, he's scared, and he doesn't want to admit to himself that he's scared. And
yeah.
then when he goes back to the mirror again, it's like nothing was wrong. And that was the part that was creepy to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, here's one of those other things. The speech that he gives makes perfect sense. You know, it's like, for the last 4 years, I put everything on the line. I've risked my life, you know, but what have we got at the end of it? And I just want a moment to reach out for some happiness. You know, and everybody knows, well, there's something wrong. This doesn't sound like Garibaldi, but, you know, it's not like the stereotypical science fiction different persona in the body where, you know, he comes in behaving completely weird. Yes, Captain, I would like to have a glass of milk. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nothing like that. It fits with the character. It's just not quite right. You know what I'm saying? You know, it works. It works really well. You know, what is he going to do? Well, you know, people lost a lot of stuff during the war. They're going to need somebody to help them find it. And here's a chance for me to do some more good, just in a different way. Okay, you know, everybody's like, all right, you know, and you know, when Zach talks to him about it to Garibaldi, he's like, Chief, you know, what's going on? You're walking away from the job, and he's like, I'm not walking away from the job. You know, cast it in terms that Zach can understand. Look, I gave you a chance. You know, when nobody else would, I gave you a chance, and I guessed right. So, you know, who's to say I'm not guessing right about me? Yeah, okay. All right, Chief, if you say so.
Yep.
Let's see. What else do we have in here? We also have Well, here to me, this was the weakest part of the episode. It was Bester's little soliloquy in front of
the cryo tube.
Right? Yeah, the cryo tubes with his lover. Yeah, I don't know. I thought the speech was a little weak. I love you. I miss you. That's all right. They think I'm hurt. Well, I got something that's going to hurt them.
The part where he was saying, you know, I miss you, there's no one back home to talk to, made him start to seem compassionate. And then he's like, yeah, I bet they're teasing me. I'll show them. And I'm like, okay, there's the little, little angry kid again.
Yeah, right. But I guess here's the thing. This is one of those things, and I even remember it, you know, thinking this when the episode first aired. Bester's on board. Even if Zach walks away and closes the door, you don't think there's going to be a camera and a microphone on him?
Hmm.
You know? I mean, they don't trust him as far as they can throw him.
That was like a storage wing of MedLab. How is there going to be cameras and microphones in there? I mean, they don't actually have cameras and microphones in every nook and cranny. From what I remember, it's just some of the major traffic areas, the brig, and some of the secure areas like ambassador's quarters, VIP quarters, and the command level stuff.
All right, I'll give you that. I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll take that back. I just thought it was a little weak. But I did like, you know, the one thing I will say is you get a real sense for Bester's the depths of Machiavellian scheming that he'll go to get his own ends.
Mm-hmm.
He sets up his own squadron to take the fall.
Not just his own squadron, some of his best pilots, you know.
Yeah. In order to at least gain, if not the trust, at least the confidence of erstwhile allies.
Mm-hmm. And I do have to wonder if maybe some of the people he selected for that mission might have been telepaths that he thought were corrupted by the shadows.
Well, that's interesting. I know, hard to say, because that one, you know, that's sheer speculation he mm-hmm. talks about. And in that little speech, he mentions that, you know, Black Omega was his baby, and he handpicked the pilots, but he'd gladly sacrifice them again for a chance to get her back. So I don't know. I would think, if anything, Black Omega might still be one of those holdouts that Bester still has. I don't know. That's something that's never really explored in the context of the show.
Hmm.
But it does. Here's another thing, though, that makes me wonder. In terms of just military strategy, we see here where Clark establishes
the quarantine, the blockade.
Yeah, right at the jump gate. And again, I guess it's something that's not explored a whole lot, but jump gates. Even though you've got capital ships that are able to form their own jump points and allow vessels of various size to travel through, jump gates are still used quite a bit for military purposes. So if that's a choke point, why don't more people just station a squadron or group of ships at the jump point, at the jump gate, just wait for whoever's coming through and just blast them?
What?
I'm not sure I can explain it any better than I just did. If that's a choke point, it off.
Well, it's not a jump gate into Babylon 5. It's the last jump gate.
Right, I understand that. I understand. That's not my point. I'm talking from a more general strategic.
Oh, because you don't want to affect commerce? Because you've got commercial place, you've got traffic going to other places besides Babylon 5.
Sure, I understand that. But I guess I'm just talking in general. If you have a conflict, not this specific moment, I'm mm-hmm. talking generally speaking, if you're in conflict with another another planetary group or whatever. God, I'm not. It's so scatterbrained. I'm sorry, but there, you know, you expect a fleet to come through the jump gate. Just sit there at the jump gate waiting for them to come through. We don't see that quite as much as I would think you would.
I wouldn't think that it would be a wise move to be anywhere close to the jump gate when that much energy came through. You don't want to be caught in the vortex as it opens and then closes. You know, who knows what that kind of energy would do? You open it up, you start firing into it. Whoops.
I like something that you just said, though, and maybe this is just one of those tacit things that all civilizations agree on, is jump gates are expensive and rare to build. Excuse me. So even if you've got a conflict going on, nobody wants to blow up jump gates because, mm-hmm. When it's all said and done, you want to still be able to access or have your people be able to access whatever it is you've been fighting over.
Right.
You blow up the jump gate, it just makes it that much harder.
And technically, I don't know that they had the right to try to stop non-Earth transports going through. So, say, a Drazi transport came through and they blasted it. I don't think the Drazi would look very kindly on that.
Well, that's true. And I think that's one of the reasons Babylon 5 managed to stay alive, even in the grip of the blockade, as they were obviously getting help from them in Bari. But I imagine a number of the other races as well were lending aid. And yet somehow the mail still managed to get through. So let's see, what else do we have to say about this episode? Sheridan watching them party from the...
Yes.
The walkway.
A little melancholy. Yeah, like he knows it's like, okay, yeah. This isn't going to last very long, so I hope they enjoy it.
Right. And he can't participate in that because he knows too much. I mean, in that sense, again, we get back to the subtle changes and shifts in Sheridan's character after he comes back from dying as Zahadum. He can't immerse himself in the day-to-day because he understands how transitory it all is.
I don't think it's just that it's transitory. I think he realizes that it's more fragile. And in order to be able to actually live, you have to maintain a certain level of blissful ignorance about the bigger picture and the bigger picture beyond that and the bigger picture beyond that.
Right. Well, Lorien says to Ivanova in Into the Fire, he talks about when you're practically immortal, things like love have no meaning because those you love turn to ash.
Mm-hmm.
He says you should embrace that remarkable illusion because it might be the greatest gift your race has ever received.
Yeah, I thought that was a very, very dark thing to say. And it was like the illusion that love lasts forever. You hold on to that, kid. You're going to need it.
right. I didn't see that as particularly dark. I thought it was insightful. I think it's one of those, it's a recognition of the greater truth. As Niels Bohr said, the opposite of a small t truth is a falsehood, but the opposite of a capital T truth is another capital T truth. I think that's one of those instances.
Mm.
The truth is that it is transitory, that it is fragile and illusory, but it's important that you hold on to that and treat it as though it's a forever thing. Epiphanies. It's not an episode, when I pull out the DVD and go, I wonder what I'll watch an episode.
Yeah,
that's never really one that's on the list of rewatchables, but I really enjoyed going back to it this time.
Yeah, it's like it's not the great big story, but it has the crumbs that begin a couple of other really good stories.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. So you can't miss it, but you can't completely ignore it either.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yes.
I think we're done here.
I think we're done. All right. We're going to take a quick breather, go refill our beverages, and be right back after this.
We love our kids.
And we love being moms.
But we also know that sometimes you have to be a mean mom.
I'm Megan.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Val. And we are the hosts of
Mean Mommies Club.
We are mean mommies because
we don't give in to temper tantrums.
We make you eat healthy food.
We are ruthless with timeouts.
We are mean mommies because
we are not raising kids.
We are raising responsible adults.
www.meanmommiesclub.com.
Ding.
Because we're lame, yeah.
And we're back to wrap this thing up.
Phew.
We have fans who love us and send us stuff.
Well, the audio bit is basically, Summer, your refusal to re-record our show opening is met with some consternation, and Kurt has taken it upon himself to provide an alternate. So, Mike, go ahead and roll that.
In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. But it failed. JMS is post.
Yeah, this is huge.
It's kind of a knife in the back of B5 fans.
JMS's recent announcement that he's going big or going home.
It's his ball, so he can take it and go home if he wants to.
Discussions from Warner Brothers about doing more DVDs, again at a low cost, or a cable thing, again with minimal investment.
Creator himself doesn't have any faith.
They did more to subtract from the legacy than to add to it. It became something more. Our last best hope.
Hold the line against the darkness. Never give up, never surrender.
The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. I have a plan.
Okay. That's nice. Who sent that to us?
That was Kurt.
Well, bless that, you, that's Kurt. Sort of that's his, awesome.
Yeah, that's sort of his year four, year five mashup there.
Yeah, that's a good mashup. Yeah. And just throwing in the little Cylon tag at the end, that was just funny.
Yeah, I have a plan. That was good.
Hey, may I make a suggestion? Uh-huh. I mean, I know what that's useful for. I know Summer will never let us use it on the show, but it's a great promo that should be sent across all the Farpoint Media shows.
I'm
that's
with
a
you.
Wonderful promo.
It's awesome.
And it will invoke, I mean, it raises the bar on the production value of promos. So, come on. Let's do this.
All right. Well, Kurt, thanks for our new promo.
We love you, Kurt.
All right. I've got here an email. This comes to us from Isaac Lynn in Ottawa. And the reason I'm reading this, I'm really trying not to beat the dead horse, but he makes some interesting points regarding the whole bit about JMS's announcement about no more Babylon 5 and fan expectation and things like that. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worthwhile. So let me go ahead and read this. And like I said, I think it'll stir some conversation. He starts off, "Hi, Summer, Tim, Jeffrey, Mike, and company. I'm writing to disagree with some of the views expressed by your guests in your last podcast. It's too bad Jeffrey couldn't help cast the situation in business terms as he did in the previous show. The reality is that Babylon 5 is a fringe franchise. It does not have the same level of support behind it as other fictional creations. To be honest, when I hear fans talk about arrogance, to me it is they who come off as a bit presumptuous. Copyright law has arisen to encourage people to create new creative works. Giving authors exclusive rights is the trade-off to entice them to share their works with the general public. Why should fans expect authors to exercise their rights based on the terms dictated by the fans? You had discussed how low-budget productions can be effective in drumming up fan support. Be that as it may, who are we to tell authors to surrender their rights to develop and produce their creations as they wish? I agree that it may be wise to encourage fan productions within prescribed limits, but I don't think fans should feel like they deserve to be allowed to create their own productions. Regarding the opinion that somehow Fran creativity is shut down, budding artists are completely free to develop their own concepts unrelated to Babylon 5. I do understand the attraction to produce derivative works beyond just getting to reuse someone else's ideas and thereby saving some effort. People enjoy sharing within a community. However, although there can be exceptions, typically creative projects of a certain size and investment are required to generate long-term sustainable communities. This costs money, and producers want to protect their rights to benefit from their investment in order to generate the required return. I think some of the extreme reactions are perhaps due to an over-idolization of JMS to start with. Some fans may have feelings of being betrayed by their hero. I believe that if you take a more objective look at it, there's nothing really remarkable about wanting to do more than just milk a few more dollars from diehard fans with low-budget direct-to-DVD productions. B5 is an epic story, and such stories need a bit of grandeur to hold up well. This does require a certain level of production values and the size of cast to achieve beyond what we saw in Lost Tales. If the original series had been done like the Lost Tales, I don't think it would have lasted as long as it did or gained as many fans. To summarize, as a fan, I'd love to see new B5 stories, but I don't feel like anyone owes me new stories, and as I said in my previous email, it's hard to expect that the same lightning can be recaptured, so I'm happy to remember Babylon 5 as it was.
I'd have to read this.
Yeah, I'd have to reread through that.
As you read it to me, there were parts I said, well, I agree, and then parts that I said, well, we never said that, and then parts that I said, well, wait a minute, what are you saying here? So
it sounded like the gist of it was, how dare we try to make our own B5 stories because JMS doesn't want to make any more and deal with Warner Brothers. But it wasn't that we could or couldn't. It was more what would happen if somebody did. You know, how can we have the best of both worlds? Because, you know, damn it, I think we deserve it. there has to be a way for JMS to still profit off new B5 stories, but have other people do what he thinks is, he doesn't, you know, need to spend the time on right now. You know, sure, he might not want to do a $2 million webisode or however long it might. He could do something like Joss Whedon did with Dr. Horrible. You know, he might not have to do all of the production, be executive producer, oversee it, kick somebody's ass, let somebody else do the heavy lifting.
How many people have written in the Star Trek universe? How many people have written in the Batman universe?
Well, regarding the Star Trek universe, Mike, though, I think that's one of, that almost is, you know, the argument against it. There's been so many fingers in that pie, it really dilutes.
Yeah, well, let's not go, let's get back here to what Isaac's trying to say. What was he indeed?
Well, I think the first part of it is he's basically, it's a wake-up call to fans. He I think he feels that fans who are overreacting to JMS's announcement are in themselves being arrogant by demanding that the creator of this work behave in a certain fashion, or that somehow he owes the fans something.
That's what I got. So wait, hold it there. Let's just talk about that for just a second. Mm-hmm. So I that's the part that I was like, wait a minute, we didn't do that. We have not been demanding of more B5 from Joe. What we have been incensed with, this is like Bill Clinton. No, I did not have sex with that woman. Well, maybe I did have a little bit of sex with her, if you really want to call that sex. I mean, Joe has, we hang on his words. We don't make this shit up. We hang on his words, and he has told us and kept us apprised of how he has made progress. And he alluded clearly and succinctly that we were going to see more Lost Tales. And then, oh, I guess maybe I did have sex. Guess what? We're not going to do any more Lost Tales because I really can't do this unless I'm making a big feature. And so that's what has caused the outrage. It's not that we've been demanding of him. It's like, wait a minute. You told me one thing. We're getting all hot and bothered about what you said, and now you're telling me no, and you're sending me home all limp and used up? What? Wait. So am I missing what Isaac was saying?
No, I think that's part of it. I think he's reacting to, we had the one caller that actually called into to Pod Culture that Brad sent to us. He's talking about, going and shooting J. Michael Straczynski's dog between the eyes or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That's a little extreme. I can agree with that. I think as fans, I'm with you. I think it's more the tone of the announcement, not so much the announcement. I don't have it in front of me, and I saw something somewhere. It wasn't sent into the podcast to our Gmail account, but it was basically excerpted from, I want to say, JMS's comments at Comic-Con, where he I don't want to say soft-pedaled it, but he basically said yes. He went into Warner's to talk about the next round of Lost Tales, and as I recall reading this, so take it with a grain of salt, and again, this is what JMS is telling the crowd. They went back in to talk about it, and Warner's position was still, let's do another round, see how well it's received. And, at that point, Straczynski is like, what else do you need me to do? I think maybe the tone of it, it was more an emotional response from Straczynski, that he'd reached his limit. And, could he have said it better? Probably. But I think the point is that, once again, Warner's was taking still a cautious approach. And Straczynski's point is we've got nothing left to prove.
Right. But you're still speaking out of turn, Tim, because
that's true.
You weren't there. And so this is all just babble wabble. Right. I'm just trying to get back to addressing what Isaac was saying. And,
right. Okay.
And it's rare that we take issues with our fan input to this matter. But maybe I didn't hear exactly what Isaac was trying to say.
Well, the other thing he's talking about, he's addressing the concept of fan productions. And, I think he's also taking issue with we as fans saying, well, if he's not going to do it, let us do it. And the one point that the one word that keeps getting tossed around here is franchise. And part of me wonders if that's really not applicable. Straczynski didn't do this with the eye of creating a franchise to begin with. He had his story he wanted to tell. It took off. A certain faction at TNT said, hey, we like this universe. What can you give us more in the Babylon 5 universe? And this Crusade was born.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the franchise begins. But I'm not sure that was really the intent.
Mm.
If you follow me, Straczynski's comments in his initial announcement were, I did this thing. It stands on its own. I'm proud of it. If I never do anything else with Babylon 5, I've got this and I'm happy with it. And maybe it's time to move on. That doesn't sound like somebody working to create a franchise.
Well, and I don't think there was, there might have been a few splinters, but I don't think as a whole the fans objected to that statement. It's valid.
No.
We're all good with it.
Yeah.
We were thrilled that we got what we got and excited about the prospect that we were going to get more. So, okay.
Now, let's address, because one of the other things I think that Isaac is touching on is the expectations of fans regarding making fan productions with a property, shall we say, that's copyrighted by a particular creator. Now, Summer, you're a writer, you're a creative person. To you, why would you want to create a fan production in the Babylon 5 universe as opposed to coming up whole cloth with the Summer Brooks universe?
Because getting it into TV right now would be very, very difficult. I don't know. I don't think it does any justice to the rich, detailed universe that he created to not want to play in that universe. There's very, very few universes, worlds, settings that other authors, other writers have written, that have created, that I would want to play in. There's maybe five total ever. And I read a lot. I watch a lot of TV. I watch a lot of movies. There are only a handful that I would be honored to help contribute to, that I feel passionate enough to want to contribute to. And Babylon 5 is one of those. And if I had the opportunity to write a new novel, or like a new line of novels, to submit a spec for a web project, I don't know, I would jump on it. I would, in a heartbeat.
But you would want to do it under the auspices, I mean, frankly, number one, to get paid, but also that it would be under the auspices of something sanctioned by JMS and
yes.
thus become canon. You
yes,
wouldn't want
I would.
To say,
I would.
You know what? Here's the Summer Brooks fanfic in the B5 universe. Enjoy.
Yes, I would, because of how I feel about B5, I would want there to be a little playground that JMS sets aside and says, here are my rules, or maybe a smaller playground over here. Okay, this is the cage fighting area. There are no rules over there, but you guys stay over there. But I would want an area. I would want to know that this is something he approved of.
Right.
You know?
And that's, to me, that's a really interesting point that you hang on, because, I mean, again, we get back to the Star Trek fan productions or the Star Wars fan productions. None of that is sanctioned by Lucasfilm or 20th Century Fox or Paramount or CBS. They've just basically said, don't do it for money and we'll leave you alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, now New Voyages is sort of the anomaly in all that. You know, they've got some official sanction, you know, and we don't need to discuss all the ins and outs of that. But what I hear you saying then is, you know, if somebody came up with, just started doing Babylon 5 stuff for Grins and called you up and say, well, Summer, you know, we're just putting something together here. We're 10 fans. We're making our own little movie. Can you write us a script? Would you do it?
I don't know.
I think here's our mission. Tim, here's your mission.
Oh, God.
Let's get Isaac on the phone next week. Are we doing a show next week?
No.
No.
We're not doing a show. Right, we're off 1 week?
Yes. Yes, but no.
Viewers, listeners won't notice. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, well, we just pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
I think Isaac is trying to make some valid points in an important conversation mm-hmm. that is a dialogue that will go on for quite some time. So let's get Isaac on the show here. And
I think that would be a great idea. And that was the reason that I pulled his email, is because I think he had some fresh takes on right. on some points here. So
now I should quantify my answer a little bit. And I'm talking about a video project. All right. There are a lot of audio projects out there. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. There's two out there now. There's Voices of Babylon, which I am happy to contribute my voice to. And there's a new project out there based on a fan-created Babylon 5 game. You may have heard the promo for it in this show, but I don't have the URL in front of me right now, so I can't.
The Nova Babylonia?
No.
Oh, that's a different one, then.
Yes. They sent us
a link that I'll have to get up on the website. But it's got a link in the other day from a whole new, different audio thing.
Yeah, so. this is based on a fan based game for Babylon 5 that came up in the promo is pretty cool.
This the one that I received. Like I said, I just glanced at it briefly. Takes place sometime in the future with one David Sheridan being involved.
No, totally different. Okay. So there's two projects out there then. But yeah, no, I'm talking about a more higher profile project than a podcast or an audio production, you know, a radio play type thing. I'm talking either a web series, you know, a bunch of video episodes, something directed TV, DVD, a TV, even if it's a made for TV special movie, you know, I'm talking about a higher profile,
sure,
like, or middle profile, I guess, project. Audio projects, run for it. Anyway.
Okay.
Dun,
is that it?
Dun.
If that is, if
I
is
think that's
that,
it for now.
That's
yeah.
all. Yes. We when, until we talk more with Isaac, that will be it. We are done with this episode.
Yeah, we are.
If you have the chance,
tell them where we're going to be.
Where are we going to be? Oh yeah, we're going to be
doing a show next week.
No, there is going to be a show.
Well, there is going to be a show.
There is going to be a show, but there's not going to be a live feed.
That's because we were really hard.
We were sneaky.
Sneaky.
So much for the magic of radio.
Yes.
This is an open. Sunshine is the best policy, right. And
there
we
is,
just
live yes. Here. There was. We there will be no live decision. Feed, but the people who are expecting a show will get a show. So there.
Yeah.
at least I think. I can't remember.
You already
now.
Pulled the curtain back. I mean, that's the moving the studios.
We pulled back the shower curtain.
So yeah, we're not going anywhere.
I am.
You messed it all up.
No, we are. We're going to Vegas. We're going to Vegas.
Yes, we're
for
going
the
to
media.
There's.
By the
there's,
time you hear this, we've already been there and come back, and we'll tell you about it.
NME in Las Vegas, and then Dragon Con at the end of the month. Several people will be there. Our intrepid editor Brad from Pod Culture will be there, along with his entire Pod Culture crew. I think a good third of Farpoint Media is going to be there. So if you run across people going Farpoint Media is mother, Farpoint Media is father, just pat them on the shoulder and point them in the right direction for their panel.
If you run across these people, back up and run over them again.
So we have a lot of stuff to plug. First of all, if you do enjoy what you hear, our arguments, or even if you disagree with them but you like having the argument anyway, please donate. Like I said, we are moving the studios, and that's that's some heavy stuff to move. And
I need carpet.
Mike needs more carpet. So yeah, go ahead. And
I need screws so I can screw the desk back together.
Mars if you're needs women, but Mike needs carpet.
If you're a Warner Brothers lawyer, call us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, because we have some questions for you, sir. But yes, go
that
ahead.
Could be bought.
Yeah, please donate. Also, we have forums. If waiting
forums. Oh, I thought you said forearms. I thought you were like getting physical.
No,
I've only got two arms.
No, forums.
I am what I am. What I am.
Community based fan input bulletin boards online. You can find those at farpointforums.com. Stop making me laugh.
I can't stand no more.
Hi, Popeye.
Very
good. Come by our website, BabylonPodcast.com. Check out all the other stuff. We're slowly adding to more and more Babylon 5 resources, either new ones or long lost ones. We're slowly getting them in there. If you have an email to send, if you want to voice your own comment or concern, or just tell us we're doing a good job or a bad job. That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to call in a voicemail, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Here we beat the dead horse to a pulp.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the virtual dividing line of intellectual properties.